Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short
the
routes.
Boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Gill, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception Perception, the show. All right, Matt. I'm excited to talk about some of these profiles here, and we're also going to introduce a new segment here on the podcast where we try to match some of the quarterback data with our wide receiver data. Alfredo Brown obviously has been doing an incredible job. By the time you listen to this, there will be a bunch of new quarterback profiles on the site. Today, we're going to be talking about Cam Ward and his potential match with Carnell Tate and Calvin Ridley, but I want to start at the top of the list at wide receiver. We're talking about Puka Nacua. I know he was great last year, Matt, but I think when you watch the tape, what really stuck out to you?
I mean, I think we talked about him as someone that was a graduation candidate, you know, this time last year. Like, we thought that his year two profile really cemented him as a tier one receiver in the NFL, you know, a top five guy at his position, and really nothing that happened last year dissuaded us from that. As a matter of fact, you could argue he really just kind of cemented his case doing it 2 years in a row as an elite performer, I think is really impressive for him. And yeah, I think he's just such a fascinating receiver because he, I mean, production wise is like completely impeachable in terms of what he's done so far. Since he entered the league in 2023, he has led all qualifying receivers in successful plays, targets, first down, and yards per route run. He also has collected the most total EPA on his targets. Now, of course, our job here at Reception Perception is try to isolate him from the surrounding variables. And obviously,
right,
few receivers have better surrounding variables than Puka Nacua does. He has Matthew Stafford as his quarterback, reigning MVP. He has Sean McVay as his play caller slash offensive designer, who is, you know, consistently ahead of the curve. Right. And so obviously it's just like, what is Puka Nacua doing, you know, in isolation? Still pretty damn good player, you know, still a really, really good player who wins in what I would call kind of a multifaceted role. If we were to just, you know, label it altogether, like his primary alignment would be this Z receiver in this offense. And he gets like a little bit of power slot role as well. And obviously Sean McVay is really good at blending personnel usage altogether anyways. You know, there's some stuff that like, hey, it's kind of a slot-ish rep, but he really is an outside receiver. And again, that's where he kind of becomes that off-ball player. He's now, the last two seasons, aligned more off the line of scrimmage than on the line of scrimmage. He's taking 39.6 and 41.4% of his snaps as that receiver the last few years. Slot rate has gone up a little bit each of the last 2 years. He's been in the backfield more than 10% of his snaps in all three seasons because he's usually just in motion so often. So really a multifaceted role. He lines up all over the formation. But again, his primary role would be as that Z receiver across from what you'd want to be like a traditional X, which obviously for this team is Devontae Adams last year.
Yeah, when we're talking about raw numbers, it's 166 targets, 129 receptions, 1,715 receiving yards, and 10 touchdowns. He tacked on an extra 100 yards rushing and another rushing touchdown as well. So 1,800 scrimmage yards, 11 scrimmage touchdowns, 77.7% catch rate. I mean, this guy was catching absolutely everything, career high across the board when we're talking about targets, receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns, and catch rate as well. So just an incredible season there in year number three. Matt, you touched on something there that really piqued my interest, right? We know that he's awesome. Mm-hmm. Puka Nacua is incredible, and he's been gangbusters since day one. But how critical is it for him to have success at this level while also having a high level X in this offense. Because again, as you mentioned, he played mostly off ball. He can move around. He's playing Z, he's playing slot, and he's been incredible in that role. But how critical is it for him to have a high level X in the offense?
Yeah, I think it's critical for any of these offensive trees to have that X receiver, just because then you are able to do so much with your wide receiver one. It was Cooper Kupp that was this guy before Puka Nacua, right? You can kind of see this in terms of, again, I mentioned the just 2023, he took 50.4% of his snaps on the line of scrimmage. It was 39.6% in year two, and then 41% this last year. So again, more snaps off ball than on ball, as opposed to in his rookie year, he was slightly more snaps on the line of scrimmage. And you're only able to do that if you have like a quality X receiver. And that was kind of like the key in year two. You could see Cooper Kupp got hurt really early in week one of 2024. But even when he returned, and then Puka Nacua, who also got injured, he returned. We forget in 2024, at one point, they're throwing like some questionable folks there in that Rams offense with both those guys banged up. Once those guys both got back, it was very clear that they were kind of deprioritizing Cooper Kupp and putting Puka Nacua more in that kind of slot heavy off ball Z receiver role. But you can't have two of those types, right? Unless Puka Nacua is going to be used. And I think obviously based on the charting data, there's some level of optimism that he could play as a starting X receiver. I mean, we're talking about a guy with an 84th percentile success rate versus press coverage, 80th percentile success rate versus man coverage. He wins at all three levels of the route tree, which I do want to come back to and break down here in a moment. But I think he could play X receiver, but like Ja'Marr Chase can also play X receiver on in every single snap basis. And I think actually, like, if I was to line these guys up for 10 routes, who do I think would be better on the 10 routes? I probably would say it would be Ja'Marr Chase over Puka Nacua. But the Bengals have even started to use Chase less and less and less as the X to further maximize him. So I think this was a really interesting kind of dilemma that the Rams had. And maybe they were probably just locked in on taking Ty Simpson the first round, like all the way, because they wanted like a future plan at quarterback, and there was a connection with Les Snead and whatever. But this was like an interesting dilemma when you looked at the receivers in the first round this year, the guys that were going to be available to them, like Mekhi Lemon. Is that kind of a hat on the hat? You know, like, I think Sean McVay is creative enough to make it work, and you can blur those positional lines. But do you start to have like a diminishing levels of return on Puka Nacua if his snaps at X receiver go up? So yeah, I think it is critical. I think that's why they pursued AJ Brown. Then when that was a little too pricey for them, and they were, you know, from what you hear, scared off by the medicals, that's why they're like, okay, we're just going to keep Davante Adams around this year, even though we did potentially try to trade him. Like, they do need that X receiver in this offense, not just to make the offense come to life, which I do think having a really good quality starting X receiver does make this offense really take to new heights, but it also does allow Puka Nacua to do these things that he does really well as a movement option.
You talk about what this guy does well. Obviously, he's got a nearly all green route tree. Didn't go all green.
So if you're just tuning in with us, maybe you're a new listener, you're coming back here because the NFL season is approaching at rapid
fast
pace.
fast approaching.
James and I have been joking this offseason that if you go back through the course of reception perception history, and I don't have the list of players in front of me, but one of our Discord subscribers, Stan Boston, actually I think compiled a list of the players that have had an all green route tree, which for the record is not like an indicator of quality or anything, because it is very, you know, it doesn't really matter, but it is kind of funny when you go and look at the guys that have gone all green. There's some interesting fellas, if we want to say, that have done it. Antonio Brown, obviously, Brandon Ayuk, Deontay Johnson, Stephon Diggs, obviously an interesting cat in his own right. It's maybe caused some guys to get a little troubled, you know,
a little loopy,
because you know what, they're always open. and they're not and they're not getting the targets to be the commensurate with that level of talent. And obviously, Puka Nacua has had himself an interesting offseason. So James and I were wondering, is Puka Nacua going to be the next guy?
Is he coming back all green?
Route chart curse. He actually came in one route at the NFL average, the flat route. So if he had one more successful flat route, we could be talking about an all green guy here. But yeah, there's been other guys as well that have been all green, like CeeDee Lamb is one. Justin Jefferson's done it. Justin Jefferson was a hell of a good soldier through what he dealt with last year and didn't get too loopy. So, you know, that's the joke of it all. But yes, he did come in above the NFL average on all route types, except the flat where he was within the average. So it's a yellow route if we're doing the color carding.
Beautiful. I love it. Puka Nacua obviously works primarily in that intermediate area of the field. When you look at his route participation over the top, it doesn't have a single route, corner, nine, or post that is in double digits, right? So, again, huge usage in the dig route, 28%. Huge usage in the slant route, 18%. 11% curls. So those are his three most ran routes, and they're all little inbreakers here. I shouldn't say little, but they're all inbreakers here, right? Yeah. For Puka Nacua. So when you kind of take a look at that, Matt, I wanted to piggyback off that conversation that we've had before, where guys who are running these short and intermediate routes and towards the middle of the field, there is a little bit injury risk now when we're talking about Puka Nacua. He's dealt with some injuries too in his history. But man, can you talk about his after the catch ability there?
Yeah, it's something that is really interesting. Going over the middle and the injury rates at some of this for some of these guys. I do think that is worth kind of discussing. We talked about it a little bit with Rashee Rice, who works over the middle of the field, you know, maybe more than any other receiver. But yeah, the interesting thing about Puka Nacua's route tree, you mentioned just the lack of downfield routes. I mean, 8.3% of the nine routes, 4.3% of the post, and 4% on the corner routes. I mean, he's not working a lot of these vertical downfield routes. Now, he obviously wins down the football field, but a lot of that has some of the breaking routes, as you mentioned. 28.2% route percentage on the dig route. That's just a monstrous number. It's actually huge. The most of any receiver charted so far here in 2025, just ahead of Michael Pittman at 27%. It's one of the higher ones in the full history database. I mean, this is Puka Nacua's jam, okay? Like running dig routes, big in breakers over the middle of the field. It is the highest dig route percentage on record far in reception perception. And that is what Puka Nacua does. Well, by the way, I asked him after his rookie season. Haven't talked to Puka since then. Okay. Wonder what he's like more interpersonally. But anyways, point being, talked to him after his rookie year, and he said this was his favorite route to run. He loves the in cut on a dagger concept, which would be a dig route while someone runs the clear out route. And he's so good on these. 82.1% success rate is really excellent. But almost is, you know, kind of bested even by his work on outbreakers. His out route rate, 9.4%, along with the screen and dig, the only route above the NFL average from a rate perspective. And he has a 92.3% success rate, which is obviously an elite number. I mean, his route tree is very similar to JSN in that way, that it's so much like dig and out on that 90 degree angle cut. This is where teams are making more explosive plays than ever. I actually think being able to throw out routes off of some of these condensed formations has really activated some of these players like Puka Nacua and JSN, who aren't your traditional wide receiver one body types or whatever. Even like a deployment way, obviously Puka Nacua, JSN leaned more into X receiver stuff, but Puka Nacua and JSN wouldn't even typically from an alignment perspective look like Nico Collins or Julio Jones of old types.
Right.
And that's how you're really able to get some of these explosive plays, these outbreakers and everything off of some of these condensed formations. And even when you're in the slot as well. And obviously Puka is capital E elite in that way on the dig and out route combination. It's really critical to kind of look at some of the best performers on these two patterns. And I think those are guys who can really go to the moon.
Puka Nacua and JSN, as you mentioned, have similar route trees. And I find it really interesting too, Matt, right? Like the profile of a stud alpha wide receiver, I think has changed quite a bit, especially over the last, I would say, like 3 or 4 years probably. But just Puka Nacua and JSN being able to work inside more, whereas all those guys you mentioned, you know, like Julio Jones and all them, like Calvin Johnson, it's just these guys were boundary X receivers, and so much of the passing attack was built around those guys, what those guys could do, and even the gravitational pull of what they would do to defenses to open up things underneath and in the middle was so critically important. But just the shift from X to kind of sort of this flanker slot type of player, I think has been really fascinating to me from a football level.
Totally. And like, I think one way to just look at that real quick and cheat is like to look at that nine route percentage being 8.3%.
Yeah.
You know, obviously a guy like Puka Nacua is making explosive plays. The Rams passing offense is hunting explosive plays. And that's really where you get some of these, you're like, yeah, you're not throwing the low percentage go routes on the boundary. That's not to say that Puka Nacua never can do that. 8.3% is obviously below average, but it's not 0%. And you will see Puka Nacua. He's actually really gotten a lot better. This is an area he told me after his rookie season he wanted to get better, is like working along the boundary in contested catch situations, just working on his hands overall. We can say mission accomplished on that one. He had a 64% contested catch rate in 2023, jumped up to 82.4%. this past in 2024, and then had an identical 82.4% in 2025. So nice. He's definitely improved in that contested ball winner way. But like, again, that digging out combination, that's where you're making some of the biggest explosive plays. You're not on these nine routes. I think it's really fascinating when you look at some of the, you know, number one receiver types who, you know, are below 10% route percentage on these, on the nine routes, and they're not slot first players. You know, it is Puka Nacua. Roma Dunze is 8.3% on nine routes last year. Jalen Waddle, 9.7% on nine routes. The guy we're going to talk about next, Zay Flowers, 9.8% on nine routes. So these guys that are below 10%, and even JSN, who we just talked about, is only 10.2%. It's not that high. It's still definitely below the NFL average. It's on the lower end. So I really think in today's NFL, you're making these explosive plays in the intermediate area. Obviously, if you can be an after catch monster, which Puka Nacua is, that adds another layer on top of it. And I think that's something that, you know, some of the other guys we just talked about there maybe don't necessarily have that like after catch pop in their bag, certainly as much as, I mean, Jalen Waddle, Zay Flowers, you know, even Roma Dunze, they can run after the catch, but they don't have like the unbelievable tackle breaking ability that Puka Nacua does. I mean, he was in space on 45.1% of his sampled catches, but he went down on first contact just 32% of those plays. Like his role was more vertical, but he still, even then, was unbelievably effective at breaking first contact, just keeping the football moving down the field. So that's like, he's really the embodiment and just kind of everything that you want in a modern wide receiver one, where he's not the traditional number one receiver body type, X, that whole deal.
Right.
But he's the modern archetype that that teams are chasing. You know, I think obviously Amon-Ra St. Brown, I haven't charted his full 2025 yet, but I think he's probably going to come in below that nine route rate as well. He's very much in this ballpark as well. But yeah, these are the guys who are the faces of why the modern archetype of wide receiver ones are changing, and why, yeah, you don't really want to look. There's nothing wrong with being an X receiver. And I do think some of the things like I've said about X is like the sacrificial X. Like I've seen people take it like it's jumped the shark, right? Like not all X's are sacrificial. Okay. Like there are actually some really good players that could be X's, but I mean, I just, even a guy like Marvin Harrison, who is going to be playing in this version of offense next year with Michael Floor in Arizona. Obviously he was former Rams offensive coordinator, big part of designing this passing game, even though he doesn't call the plays. Like his route tree changing to be less of the just straight vertical downfield stuff and more of these breaking area routes in the intermediate area of the field. I think that's going to be really interesting to monitor, because you would argue, I think that Marvin Harrison's rookie year was so like not a little bit sacrificial at times, but very traditional vertical X.
Yeah.
This year, I think it will be very different for him. So yeah, I do think that Puka Nacua really, like he's like a pivot point player right now in the NFL. And not only is he just straight up per route, as I said at the top, the most productive receiver since he entered the NFL on a per route basis, you know, kind of dusting people in several of these categories as well, just how far ahead he is of the field. But he is also kind of an emblematic player of how the archetype of wide receiver one is changing in today's NFL. You do want to be not just a great press man beater. His 87th percentile success rate versus zone coverage for Puka Nacua actually was better in 2024 than 2025. I think he did suffer an ankle injury at one point in the middle of the year, which maybe depresses the numbers a little bit, but still, not necessarily what I called in the profile the traditional like route up receiver. Like I don't know that he has the fluidity to be like a Justin Jefferson level like success rate player. Stephon Diggs at his peak, Antonio Brown. It doesn't really matter. It's a very different archetype of receiver, and it is really what a lot of teams are chasing right now in the NFL. There's no question about that.
I feel as if his archetype of player. And I don't know if this is true, but it feels like it's more repeatable. You know, it feels like if you could get the right play designer, you could find more players like Puka Nacua. Not to Puka Nacua's level, but players who are more similar to him versus trying to find like the next Julio Jones or the next Calvin Johnson or the next Andre Johnson, like guys who are just absolute freakazoids. You know what I'm saying? Like it feels like you can get through play design players that are a little bit more similar to Puka Nacua versus just trying to find, again, a freak athlete that can, you know, work the boundaries. You know what I mean?
I think that's a really interesting debate. Obviously, you just look at the draft capital spent on the players that you just threw out there. Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones, these guys are top level draft picks. They go inside the top 10. And obviously, Puka Nacua is a fifth round pick. And Amon-Ra St. Brown, who I think is kind of like the second player in this archetype evolution here. He was a day three draft pick as well. So you could definitely find these guys. It's just really hard to turn someone who is a fourth or fifth round pick into one of the most productive receivers in the NFL. Yeah, but
clearly, right.
But I think the archetype question is just it. This has been my point on kind of like these guys are. I mean, St. Brown definitely like a power slot to start his career, big slot receiver. He's a little bit bigger than you think. He's more powerful than you think. For sure. But he's less of a slot player now over the course of his career. But like with this archetype of player, my point with this, even dating back to like the Cooper Kupps or the Adam Thielen types, the Juju Smith-Schusters, is, and this is a lot of the stuff I do from a prospecting standpoint, is that these guys weren't necessarily the traditional, you know, outside separators, but they could be elite players if not, and obviously those guys became elite players, St. Brown and Cooper Kupp, but they could be really maximized by kicking them into the slot. And that's why I talk about this every single year. Like, is there a body type that can go from being a boundary player who, you know, is like not has flaws in their game, but could be best maximized in the slot? Rashee Rice is like the poor man's version of this archetype, a little definitely far less complete than the two guys, St. Brown and Puka Nacua, we're talking about, but he's obviously a branch off of this tree. So yeah, I definitely think you could find these guys and you put them in the right role. It just takes what I will say, you know, to give credit to St. Brown and certainly to Puka Nacua, is you got to be like a little bit of a madman, you know, because
you do.
Here's the deal, buddy. Like, if you're going to do all this cool stuff, like, remember when Mike LaFleur not long ago was talking about the Cardinals receivers and he was talking about Michael Wilson and, you know, he's talking about him like kind of in a Puka Nacua-ish role. And of course, like then fantasy Twitter goes, oh, he's going to be in the Puka Nacua role. I'm like, go read what he was actually saying. He was talking about like him blocking as the insert player in the run game, which you know, which that's what you got to do. You got to do that. Okay. Shout out to Chris Godwin. Actually, he was like the first one that was like a big time receiver doing this in Bruce Arians' offense, like being the insert player running routes up the line of scrimmage on duo runs and stuff like that. And yeah, you got to fit the run and put your nose in there. And then every now and again, you're going to run a big, you know, outcut off play action from that. And you're going to make explosive plays, but you got to earn those explosive plays by getting your, you know, getting your hands dirty in the run game and blocking and everything. You know, you also got to get your clock cleaned over the middle, as opposed to like, I'm catching a comeback route and going out of bounds, you know, for with a 180 pound safety or something over the top of me, as opposed to like a linebacker and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely you got to do a lot of different things. You got to be involved in the run game. You got to be involved in getting your clock cleaned over the middle. But for sure, it's like I think you could find these guys, and I'm just always going to be fascinated by who's like the next version of this archetype of player. And I mean, I said Mekhi Lemon at one point. Like, I don't think 4 years ago, I don't know that a player like Mekhi Lemon goes in the first round.
100%.
But with these guys kind of popping off all over the league right now, obviously he did this year.
Hey gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are gonna move. We are gonna answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Zay Flowers, who you mentioned, had a really productive season. I was actually surprised when I went back and I looked. I was like, wait, he had 1,200 yards last year? I did not see him as a 1,200-yard receiver. 118 targets, just 86 receptions. Didn't even crack 90 receptions. 86 receptions. Got 1,200 yards, 5 touchdowns. 72.9% catch rate. This is, again, career highs across the board in terms of targets, receptions, yards, not touchdowns, but in terms of catch rate as well. So, really great season from Zay Flowers. And while I was looking at his counting stats, that surprised me. But then when I looked at his reception stats too, that also really surprised me, because he has made significant, you know, gains when we're talking about man press scores, to the point now where I'm like, wait a second, is this the same guy? So I went back and I looked, and yeah, man, this guy, Zay Flowers, has made some significant gains, especially when we're talking about man press scores.
Yeah, man. I mean, to your beginning point there, like, Flowers, I think it's underrated just how productive he's been since he entered the NFL. And, you know, he's sixth in the NFL last year in yards among wide receivers, which I know a lot of that came in week 18. Just because it didn't count in your fantasy football championships doesn't mean, like, literally doesn't mean anything, especially because both those teams, Pittsburgh and Baltimore, were trying to get into the playoffs in that game. That was like a win and end situation. So even though it does, like, well, it doesn't count for it's still, Zay Flowers wasn't not trying or, you know, whatever. Like, it was, it just is random that it happened in week 18. He started massive and he ended massive because his week one was incredible. So again, sixth in the NFL among receivers in yards last year. Since he entered the league in 2023, he is 10th among wide receivers in receiving yards, and he is 14th in yards per route run. He is just behind guys who are pretty universally regarded as better than him, Drake London and Malik Nabers. And he was third in the NFL in yards per route run last season. That was despite Lamar Jackson missing time. And if we can be honest, not playing his best upon his return, even when he was out there. Like, Lamar had some of his worst games when he got back, from a statistical perspective, like an advanced metrics perspective. So that was all this, all that chaos going on, and Zay was still really productive on a per route basis. Like, he's just been, he's been really good. He's been useful. He's been durable and at times dynamic. And, you know, honestly, this was like I looked at all that. I then look over the charting profile. I even looked, kind of had a look in the mirror moment, like, am I underrating Zay Flowers? Have I not given Zay Flowers enough credit for his evolution? And I think the answer is probably yes. Like, I look at where he was in my dynasty rankings before doing the profiles. Like, you know, I think I'm not giving him enough credit for just kind of how, like, good he is. If the stars kind of align for him, I think he could have a real massive season this year. And the first kind of thing I think we should dispel about Zay Flowers, and, you know, this is just, it's bizarre. I think sometimes it's probably just a size based thing, but I even got some comments when I was talking about, like, Elijah Surratt as a potential slot receiver, like the guys we were talking about in the Puka segment, like big slot player who could go from an outside receiver into be that power slot in the pros. People are like, well, what's going to happen to Zay Flowers? And I'm like, yo, Zay Flowers is not a slot receiver. He never has been a slot receiver since coming to the NFL. In 2023, he was outside on 64.3% of his snaps sampled. He was at 59% in 2024. And then this past year, he took 61% of his sampled snaps outside. He was in the backfield on 8.4% as, like, mostly as a motion option, in the slot on 30.6%. Now, he's definitely an off-ball receiver. He's just a classic Z. Yes. And I think that's been consistent throughout the course of his entire NFL career. So he is not a slot player. He's a Z receiver. He is, you know, credit to the Ravens. They've never been one of these teams that is just kind of, you know, whereas we complain about some of the other guys that are these really awesome man coverage receivers get kind of limited and pigeonholed to the slot. The Ravens have never done that. He has been a Z receiver his entire career.
Yeah. And again, it's just, you're right. So much of it, I think, is based off of his size. He's obviously a pretty slight player. But yeah, I mean, he's been primarily an outside wide receiver his entirety of his NFL career. Now, that being said, man, he was not great on post routes, but really good everywhere else. Again, his profile is just so impressive. And to your point, just not, I don't think we've paid enough attention to him, but again, he's just been really, really impressive. He's been plus 80% last year on the dig curl slant. So he's great on inbreakers. Again, over 80% success rate on the dig, curl, and slant. So anything on these inbreakers, Zay Flowers is absolutely winning.
Zay Flowers is absolutely winning on these inbreakers. And I think that's just, especially the intermediate area, which ironically, again, we were just talking about this with Puka Nacua. Like he's this almost like the route tree looks really similar if you just lay the two out next to each other. Like 20% dig routes, 9.8% out routes, really good success rates on both of those routes as well. Like he's able to be targeted a lot in those intermediate areas, and he doesn't run a lot of just pure vertical patterns. So, you know, he's kind of like the pint-sized version of this receiver archetype. If you just forget about the fact that he weighs 180, you know, something pounds, yeah, and you just line his snap, you know, numbers, his alignment data, and his route tree, you would think like why is he not Amon-Ra St. Brown? Why is he not Puka Nacua? You know, it just, again, he's a little bit smaller than those two guys, which I do think matters. The other thing I think he's really, one thing he's improved on and one thing he's been really consistent on. And then before close it, I want to talk about where he really took a big step last year and where I think this is instructive going forward. But on the point about him, you know, kind of where I think he's gotten a lot, where some things he's really cleaned up, he's not gotten credit for. Like if you go back and read his prospect profile and reception perception, Zay Flowers kind of talked about him as a little bit of like a mistake prone player. Okay. And I think that really came came to pass for most of his NFL career. You know, he's made a lot of bonehead plays, especially early on. Like remember, I believe that was his rookie year, right, where he fumbled across into the, like when trying to go into the end zone in a playoff game against the Kansas City Chiefs when the Ravens were like the best team in the league in 2023. That was obviously a big problem there. But he's kind of cut down on some of those mistakes. Like he'll have a fumble every now and again, but he doesn't really drop passes as much as he used to. He only dropped a pass on 1.6% of his sampled targets. He caught three of four contested passes. He's been really kind of more consistent at the catch point than prior seasons. He hasn't made some of these big mistakes as much as he did previously. I think he's cut that out, which is, you know, a good part of his game. The other part that he's just been so good at, and I think doesn't get enough credit for this, he has been flat out one of the best zone beating receivers since he entered the NFL. I mean, you look at his success rate versus zone coverage, it goes 85% as a rookie, 84.2% in year two. This past year, 85.4% success rate versus zone coverage. That is a 92nd percentile mark. So he has been over 84% in all three NFL seasons. He's been atop the league in this mark. And I think what's really impressive, James, about this year is that his screen route rate really, it's still above average at 4.9%. Like he does get more screens than usual. That being said, like that's a much lower route rate than normal. In 9% in 2023, 12% in 2024. Like he's not really used as a Mickey Mouse receiver as much anymore. And he's still maintaining these really, really excellent success rate versus zone coverage numbers. I think he does not get enough credit for how good he is at settling into zones and creating these reliable windows, particularly in the intermediate area of the field.
Only 16% route participation on the slant route too. So again, when you're talking about the screen route coming down, the slant route, I believe saw a little bit of an increase, but it's just not as, again, when we're talking about these layup routes for Zay Flowers, it's a lot less than you would think. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
he's out there working, man. Like again, 20% route participation on the dig route. That's impressive. Nearly 10% on the out route. So 30% in that intermediate area of the field. Again, this is stuff with Zay Flowers that you knew that he could do. But when you're looking at his 2025 profile, Matt, I'm really impressed with his growth as a player.
I agree with you completely there. And where he didn't have as many screens, you mentioned like slant route, curl route, and dig route all went up, like more just traditional wide receiver routes. And so I mentioned I wanted to talk about the area where I thought he really took kind of the most critical step forward in year three. And as he heads into year four in a new offense for the first time, I think this is really important. Like, this is the most important note in Zay Flowers' profile. Like, he's always been a really good man coverage receiver, 72.5% success rate versus man coverage this past year. That's a 73rd percentile mark, and it's pretty consistent with the course of his NFL career, 71.3% as a rookie, 72% this last year. Like, he's kind of always been in that ballpark.
Yeah.
But the note that really matters here is this 75% success rate versus press, which is a 76th percentile score. That is up from 62.9% as a rookie and 70.8% in year two, steadily going up. And that was all while facing a higher percentage of his routes against press coverage, Zay Flowers. And why I think this matters is because we read off all those stats at the beginning about Zay Flowers and how good he has been from a yardage perspective. Just to recap, 6th in yards last year, 10th since he entered the league in receiving yards. You know, a stat I did not point out: touchdowns. Not scored a lot of touchdowns in his NFL career. Right. He's never had more than 5 touchdowns in an NFL season. I believe it goes 5-4-5 is Zay Flowers. So how Zay Flowers really takes the next step and becomes more nationally recognized as a number one receiver, if he can do it, is he's going to score more touchdowns. And I look at a receiver, and again, while we're talking about this archetype of players, Amon-Ra St. Brown, last year, this is a quote from, or this is a stat from my new colleague over at Yahoo, Josh Norris. Amon-Ra St. Brown owned 41.5% of his team's red zone targets last year. That was number one among receivers. The next closest were Chris Olave and Devontae Adams at 30.1%. St. Brown was also number one inside the 10-yard line at 50% of his team's targets inside the 10-yard line. You would think, like, Amon-Ra St. Brown's like a slot guy. He's used a lot around the red zone. Well, yeah, they design a lot for him, for sure. They design a lot of these looks to get him free and all that stuff. However, one area where St. Brown really took a big step forward in year three is against press coverage. Success rate versus press coverage in year one for St. Brown was 52%, 68% in 2022, and then 75.6% in year three, not too dissimilar to Zay Flowers, the step he made against press coverage in year three. And yes, St. Brown is definitely bigger and a little more sturdy and physical, I think, of a player overall than Zay Flowers. Yeah. But Flowers really showed that ability to get open quickly against man press coverage. And that really matters when we get into the tight, condensed spaces of the red zone, certainly inside the 10-yard line, where things are just going to get a little more compact. He really took a big step forward there. So, and by the way, Declan Doyle, new offensive coordinator, obviously comes from Ben Johnson's tree. He was with Ben Johnson in Chicago last year. I know you're skeptical of the 29-year-old offensive coordinator. But again, just schematically, shown an ability to make use of this type of player. I mentioned how Zay Flowers' route percentage chart is very similar to like Roma Dunze's last year, Puka Nacua's last year. So again, I think he's definitely somebody that doesn't have the size profile of an 8-10 touchdown guy, but scheme wise and the way he improved against, you know, press coverage, this is the path that has to happen for him, I think, to reach that like number one receiver statistical ceiling. He's got to score a few more touchdowns. And at least we saw some evidence last year that he could improve, you know, against press coverage, the release moves and everything like that to get into those routes. There's something at least on tape, I think, that shows that he can do that a little bit better now than he had earlier in his NFL career.
Just to summarize what Matt was talking about there, in his rookie campaign, 63% success rate on versus press coverage. And then it's jumped. And again, it rose up in 2024. And then in 2025, we're looking at 75%. Success rate versus press. So going from 63 to 75%, it's a 12% jump. It, you just, If you're familiar with RP, you realize that's a significant jump.
Mm-hmm. That's big.
That's big and chunky. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So especially over a 2-year sample, Zay Flowers has clearly worked on that. And his release package, I think, has allowed him to, again, as Matt said, separate quickly. So 75% against press, that is, hey, man, we can work with that. You know what I'm saying? That's pretty good. Very impressive growth, I think, from Zay Flowers. And by the way, I know we've been talking about all this, like, short, he's separating quickly, intermediate area of the field. Listen, man, 68% success rate on the 9. Okay, like he's still, the guy still is an absolute stud, absolute baller when they ask him to go over the top. So Zay Flowers is, again, one of these players where I wasn't sure where he was going to go after his second season. And now in his third season, we have seen such tremendous growth. I'm impressed. I'm impressed. And to your point, Matt, I was certainly one of these guys who have underestimated his production and his growth as a player. And I will quickly fix that problem moving forward for sure.
He's so interesting this year, certainly in fantasy too, just because, I mean, listen, we're getting slowly closer and closer to when my therapist is going to allow me to talk about Rashad Bateman, but still not quite there yet. Bateman, though, right now, they're doing the typical offseason thing where they're like, we believe in Bateman. So we'll see. Maybe I'll talk. I mean, and by the way, I say they, I mean, the Ravens, they're talking him up as their clear number two receiver. They brought him back. Yeah. And I like Elijah Surratt. They obviously draft Jacoby Lane, who's a sacrificial X, in my opinion. Devontae Walker is also there as a sacrificial X. But yeah, I just think you look at Flowers more and more, his route chart just maps really well to this style of offense. And I think, he's just by far the most proven player, not just in the wide receiver room. I mean, shoot, even the tight ends, Mark Andrews is back. Okay, I don't know what that means. But yeah, if this offense is going to be good this year, I think Zay Flowers has a real chance to have a career year in year 4 of his NFL career here. And I do think he's kind of settled into being an underrated receiver who definitely does not get, I mentioned, per route wise, since he's coming to the NFL, he's up there in the same territories like Malik Nabers and Drake London. And you will find probably zero people that would, that would put Flowers in that category. But I like Nabers in London more than Zay Flowers too. Okay. when they're healthy, I like those guys better than Zay Flowers. But his production, and I think his RP profile is a little bit better than it kind of gets credit for. And no question that he is someone that is set up really well if Declan Doyle and this offense clicks, which James is skeptical of, and I'm a little bit more into. So we'll see how that goes. Last time, yes, I think I was a little more curious about an offensive coordinator, and you were all the way out. It was Ryan Grubb, and we don't need to relitigate who was on which side of that debate.
Hey, listen, I know Jacoby Lane is not a great separator, but man, when they get into the red zone, though, Jacoby Lane's going to be a problem, So it'll be interesting to see.
It'll be another usage. 4 or 5 touchdowns for Zay Flowers when Jacoby Lane is getting the throw it up stuff, and Elijah Surratt's getting some of the throw it up stuff. Right. There's no doubt. Both those guys are ball winners.
Yeah. So around the red zone, it'll be interesting to see, especially if Derrick Henry can stay healthy this year as well. New segment, like I talked about, matching quarterbacks with wide receivers. I want to start there with Cam Ward and talking about his two primary, or at least what we think it will be, his two primary pass catchers in Carnell Tate and Calvin Ridley. Cam's strongest routes last year, per our quarterback charter, Alfredo Brown, 86% success rate on curl routes, Matt Harmon. When you take a look at that and then also combine the fact that Cam Ward was not really strong on outbreakers. He was fine, 68% success rate on out routes, but 25% success rate on comeback, 27% success rate on corners. I don't need to tell you, those are bad, right? So when you take a look at what he does well, which I think is primarily in breaking routes, how do you kind of sort of map that to Carnell Tate and Calvin Ridley?
Okay, well, before I just disregard the premise of your question, let me at least answer. I'm going to disregard 50% of your question, but let me answer the other 50% first, which is that Carnell Tate, I think actually maps really, really well with Cam Ward. I think some of the stuff that Cam Ward does is like, curl routes make sense because he really likes to test outside the numbers. So some of those man coverage beating routes, you know, I think this is going to be big for him getting Carnell Tate here, who had an 84% success rate on curl routes in his prospect profile. I thought some of the best stuff that he did was threaten vertically and then shut it down, throttle it down to work back towards the quarterback, particularly against man coverage, where he had an 89th percentile success rate. I mentioned this several times. His 77.3% success rate versus man coverage is the seventh best mark by any prospect charted since the 2021 NFL draft class. So he's really good against man. He's really good at throttling those routes down, particularly like you look at his curl route versus his comeback route. Okay, great. Actually, it's pretty funny. You could argue two of his three worst routes were the out and the comeback. So, okay, cool. He'll be working those in breakers a lot.
Okay, good.
I remember Cam Ward as a prospect was pretty good on dig routes. And look, man, I'm running digs and curls last year, you know, for the Tennessee Titans, but 83% success rate on dig routes for Carnell Tate. I really like the way those two guys match up, and I think there's a reason that beyond the fact that they desperately needed receiver help, that they took Carnell Tate to the Tennessee Titans because I think his game matched up really well with Cam Ward. 25% route percentage on curl routes, 84% success rate. Boom, locking in. I think that's going to be a really good fit for Cam Ward. The 50% of your question that I disagree or I would take issue with is that it's going to be Wandell Robinson is the number two receiver, not Calvin Ridley.
Come on. That's fair.
They paid Lil Wandale to come in there and follow his buddy Brian Daboll. Now, look, who even knows what Calvin Ridley is? I mean, could Alec Iomanner be the number three receiver over Calvin Ridley? I mean, body type wise, I actually think Carnell Tate is pretty similar, not even a bigger version because he's a little skinnier, but taller version of peak Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, no, that's what I was saying. When they drafted him, I said, hey, it's pretty smart that Tennessee drafted a less gambly Calvin Ridley, you know? It's it's pretty good.
And 10 years younger, because Ridley is, you know, the oldest prospect to ever enter the league, if you remember those debates his draft year. But I do think Wandale is the favorite to be the number two receiver here.
Okay, that's fair.
Now, he's definitely not running man coverage beating routes on the perimeter as much, although he did take more snaps outside than usual, or at least more, he ran more downfield routes at least. So there's definitely that. But curl route success rate for him, 64%. Route percentage is under 10%. That's not going to be his route tree as much. He'll be more on the breaking routes. Not really a good out route runner. Under 67% success rate while being used a lot on the outbreakers, but really good on digs, posts, and slants is Wandell Robinson. So I do think he'll be kind of like the safety blanket for Cam Ward.
I don't know, man. I've just seen too much of Wandell Robinson to take him seriously. You know, it's like, I know he had a great 2025 coming into a contract year, and that's kind of sort of it. Like, am I wrong in thinking this about Wandell Robinson?
I mean, he's fine. He's fine, right?
That's what I'm saying. He's okay. Sure.
I'm not here getting gassed up about Wandell Robinson. I just think he's fine. I'm trying to be nice to Wandell. Okay. I thought he took some steps last year as a real receiver. He was not as much of just a Mickey Mouse gadgety, you know, route specialist. He really was good on posts and digs. What are the numbers on Cam Ward for posts and dig routes? I mean, obviously I think that's where he's going to be able to make some big plays on those bigger in-breaking routes for Wandell Robinson. That will be the key here for him, as opposed to just being a security blanket.
So on the dig route, 66.7% success rate, which is about average. I would say slightly above average, but pretty good overall. 50% success rate on the post. But to be fair, though, Matt, on that route, he only threw that 2.7% of the time. So a really, really small sample size. And as a matter of fact, he just didn't throw. Look, he threw 14% on the slant, 14% on the screen, 13% checkdowns. He had to scramble a lot. So again, other was 10.5%. So a lot of what he threw was kind of sort of like these, you know, shorter intermediate inbreakers. Didn't really have the time, I don't think, to really get out there and launch deep. Although he
did. I was
going to
say, a lot of what he was throwing was the, oh shit, things aren't going right here.
Exactly. Yeah, you know what I mean? So, what is it? 8.3% or 8.3% route participation on the 9 route. So when he did actually have time to drop back and throw, he saw that that 9 route success rate at 42%. So I know we're throwing out a lot of numbers here, but the bottom line is he threw a lot of inbreakers that were in the intermediate, especially in the short area. And the numbers from Alfredo Brown and our quarterback charting team, because we got two guys charting quarterbacks here, is the dig curl slant were pretty good. Screen routes were pretty good. You know, and I guess his other success rate was pretty decent as well. So, that's kind of sort of what we're looking at. And then, you know, again, these outbreakers, not so great. Although on a classic out route, 68%, that's actually pretty good too.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting with Cam Ward, cause there's no like traditional raw non-charting stat that you can point to and be like, ah, see, like there's a little something here. Like,
right.
Shoot. Even with Jackson Dart, who, you know, I know Alfredo's higher on Cam Ward than Jackson Dart. Like he has got better stats than Cam Ward. Even like Drake May last year had, you could be like, oh, the success right here. Like there's something, but there's no like stat with Cam Ward. So you have to go off the film, which Alfredo's a little more bullish certainly than the stats would point just by doing the film work and everything. And so I do want to keep an open mind certainly on Cam Ward improving there. And I do think Carnell Tate just really helps a lot. Like you're talking about like throwing 9 routes and stuff like that. Was he throwing 9 routes to last year? It's Elik Iomanner who doesn't get open down the football field like that. I think he needs to be more of like a movement player and winning horizontally. And I don't think he's completely hopeless there. It just is going to take a role change. He was like a vertical X receiver as a day 3 draft pick, super raw. Come on, what are we talking about here? And then the other guy's like Van Jefferson. So yeah. Van Jefferson is your other like perimeter receiver. By the way, there's been 112 receivers to run 600 or more routes since the 2023 NFL season. Van Jefferson ranks 109th out of those 112 receivers in yards per route run. Okay. So like, he's not out there making plays on the 9 routes. There's no question about that. Carnell Tate, almost a 69% success rate on 9 routes, despite the 40 time concerns. This guy knows how to set up routes professionally on the perimeter. So yeah, that like 9 curl combination, I think actually will help a lot. Cause, I'm a little mixed on Brian Daboll as a offensive coordinator, just like where his designs are at this point, but it's going to be pretty spread and shred. In my opinion, I think they'll be a little bit more spread out than some of these other teams. And okay, Carnell Tate on the boundary out there, he's going to be able to win on those kind of more static vertical routes against man coverage, which will help Cam Ward out tremendously.
Can I just say their quarterback room is low key hilarious. Like if Cam Ward flames out, okay, this is the quarterback room right now. It's Cam Ward, it's Mitch Trubisky, it's Will Levis, and it's Hendon Hooker. Those are your 1, 2, 3, 4 quarterbacks right now in Tennessee.
How is Will Levis still on this roster, bro? Like, I mean, he's got to get traded.
I have no idea. But the bottom line is these are like all like super toolsy players, you know, like all 4 of them are just insanely toolsy players that have flamed out in the NFL, except for Cam Ward. We're holding a candle out here for Cam Ward. We'll see. We'll see. Cam Ward. I liked what I saw in spurts from Cam Ward too. So I'm not totally out on the Cam Ward business, but it is interesting though that all 4 guys have been, you know, starters and not starters, bench guys, but all 4 guys are just like crazy toolsy players. Working for a guy in Brian Daboll who also loves toolsy players. So will be interesting. It'll be really interesting to see what happens in Tennessee. I like what they did this offseason, though, man, drafting Carnell Tate, bringing in Wandale Robinson. So we'll see if Calvin Ridley's got some stuff left in the juice. And, man, their tight ends, too, are really interesting. And Gunnar Helm, Daniel Bellinger, Kylan Granson is in the mix, too. But I actually really like Daniel Bellinger as a deep sleeper there in Tennessee. So we'll see, man. we'll see. It's an interesting mix of guys that got there in Tennessee, but certainly Cam Ward and Carnell Tate, their chemistry will be critical in terms of how successful this Tennessee Titans offense is. And again, this is when we talk about quarterback matching with wide receivers, this will be a recurring theme that we find on the show all the way until we get to the start of the season. So there you go. Anyways. All right. Great show, Matt. We got to get up out of here, but if you guys would go check out the website, receptionperception.com. A lot of great profiles, quarterback profiles are on the site. You will find that right now. Running back profiles have been updated as well. So there you go. Anyways, receptionperception.com. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.